The Business on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Electric Ireland. Our business is understanding yours.
Good morning. Coming up, an investment that might strike a chord, the might of Mother Jones, and cashing in on the Cupola Fucko. Contact us by text to 51551, by phone to 1850 715 150, email thebusiness@rte.ie or tweet at thebusinessrte. But first this morning, take a listen to this.
As we come on the air this morning, America and the West are facing the most perilous confrontation with Russia since the Cold War.
Russian forces are now in complete control of this part of Ukraine, the Crimean Peninsula, and they are giving every sign that they are here to stay.
I want to be very clear. Crimea was, is, and will be an integral part of Ukraine. No concessions, full stop.
And if Russia does not rapidly engage in direct talks with the Ukrainian government to find a solution to this crisis, we have been clear in the statement today that we will go further. We have today tasked the European Commission to start work on additional measures, including travel bans and asset freezes.
This morning, I signed an executive order that authorizes sanctions on individuals and entities responsible for violating the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine.
Now, Putin has put the world on notice he is willing to use military force in Ukraine and risk another conflict with the U.S. and the West.
We are on the edge of the not Cold War, but we're on the edge of hot war.
As the Crimean crisis deepened over the course of the week, as you heard in the audio there, the question of possible economic sanctions came more and more to the fore. But what are the consequences if European leaders decide to seize Russian assets, penalise Russian companies, or restrict the travel of Russian citizens? Could Europe be shooting itself in the foot with such a move? We're joined in studio by Elisabetta Donnery, a partner at Donnery Tierney Solicitors and member of the Irish-Russian Business Association, and also on the line by Chris Weaver, an Irish economist based in Moscow. I might come to you first, Chris. In terms of economic sanctions, given the relationship, particularly between the EU and Russia, it's really the ultimate two-edged sword.
Yes, it is. As you say, the you know, what we've heard so far has been fairly mild. Suspension of discussions on visa and trade have been dragging on for years anyway. So that's kind of more a warning shot. And I would expect that, you know, that we will move up a couple of levels of escalation, you know, in terms of inconvenience and travel and targeting individuals. I would expect that the Europe and Russia will be very reluctant to push it all the way to actual trade or financial sanctions, because certainly trade and financial sanctions would start to hurt the Russian economy, no question about that. But given that Russia is the world's biggest energy exporter, the biggest exporter of industrial metals in the world, and the fifth largest consumer market, buying in about $360 billion worth of goods, mainly manufactured in the European Union, there clearly will be consequences for both sides. So I think we are a long way from crossing that red line, as it were, but, you know, moving in that direction.
It's interesting, Chris, that even, I was looking at this during the week, even Germany, exporting powerhouse that it is, runs a trade deficit with Russia. It imports more from Russia than it exports to Russia.
Yeah, but that's mainly because, of course, Germany depends on the bulk of its gas from Russia. So most of the imports from Russia are gas. Since the if you like, the last dispute involving Ukraine gas in 2009, since then, Germany and Russia have actually bypassed Ukraine and built a direct pipeline, the Nord Stream pipeline, which runs under the Baltic straight into Germany. It supplies about one third of Germany's domestic gas needs. So, you know, I think it's, and in return, then Germany is currently the biggest foreign investor into Russia, selling a substantial amount of goods and services. So I think that's why, when we look at all the various political statements from President Obama, Prime Minister Cameron, Chancellor Merkel has been rather more muted, because Germany has a lot more at stake in this if it comes to a sanctions war than perhaps the others have.
Elisabetta, you know, we're still, in terms of sanctions, it's just talk at the moment, but that doesn't mean that there hasn't been consequences from the uncertainty and from the standoff for both Irish and Russian businesses.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Because there is a great connection between Ireland and Russia. And this conflict obviously is not anymore only between Russia and Ukraine. It affects the whole world. So from a perspective, from a business perspective, because I'm a lawyer in Ireland, I have my own business, it affects anyone who's doing business in Russia or in Ukraine. And I have real life examples, what clients gave to me for the last few weeks, when there were certain contracts with Russian individuals or Russian companies, which unfortunately were either terminated or postponed for the time being. And I think we have to understand that connection between Ireland and Russia is it's a good connection. Last week was a week of Russian culture in Ireland, and it's celebrated every year. And from a business point of view, there is obviously business coming to Russia. It's an export. It's mainly agricultural products, food, meat, and so on. And Irish Russian Business Association is working on expanding this trade, because it's very beneficial to Ireland and Russia, obviously. But there is also the other aspect of it. It's obviously energy supply by Russia, and Chris was
just saying, absolutely.
But also from legal point of view, I've noticed there is another aspect, because quite recently, Department of Justice of Ireland introduced this program, which involves basically investment into Ireland by foreign individuals. There are certain conditions, such as a clear criminal record and things like that. But essentially what it means is that each program involves individuals interested in investing in Ireland or purchasing properties in Ireland. Because I'm from Russia and I did law in Russia before coming to Ireland, I got lots of interest from Russian people before the conflict started in relation to these investment programs. And you would think it's very beneficial to Ireland if these people will be involved in the Irish economy. But
as the crisis has unfolded, yes, though, Elisabetta, what are you hearing at the IRBA? There must be an awful lot of concern. Are people worried? Are they trying to get out of the area?
People are very worried, and both Ukrainian people and Russian people, and because there is such a great link between the countries and trade as well between Ukraine and Russia. So at the moment, as I said, I think on Tuesday and Wednesday, three of my clients, independent, they don't have connected businesses, and this is small and medium businesses. They have businesses in Russia. They actually said that, the contracts were postponed or even terminated. So you understand that for someone who has a small business and relying on a specific contract, it's a great concern. Obviously,
Chris Weaver, we saw that on a much bigger scale in terms of what happened both to the ruble and to the Russian stock market, which was that something, do you think, that Vladimir Putin and the Russian government would have planned for or would have taken into account?
I would say yes and no, in the sense that, it seems like events since the end of the Sochi Olympics, events have been moving very, very fast. It's hard to imagine, if you like, that somebody has sat down and carefully crafted all of this. We heard this from Putin during his press conference on Wednesday, where he specifically referred to the damage, if you like, to the stock market and to the ruble. And I think that actually is a very key issue, because, there's never a good time for a dispute, as it were. But the timing on this is very, very unfortunate for Russia, because the background is that while Russia's got a very strong balance sheet in terms of the budget is balanced, we've got a current account surplus, and Russia's got a very low level of debt. But the pace of economic growth in Russia has been sliding for more than a year. Last year, the economy grew at only 1.3% instead of an expected 3.5%. So there had been a lot of build-up, if you like, to the Sochi Olympics, in the expectation that once the Olympics were over, the government would have to sit down and figure out how to fix economic growth. And a large part of that was focused on bringing in foreign investment into Russia. Russia needs now a new growth model based on foreign investment. So I think the government is certainly, while they're committed, obviously, to the Ukraine and can't back out now, I think they are very, very wary of the impact on the economic model and how that might affect public support for the Kremlin and for the president going forward.
Because if it literally hits the value of the ruble in the average Russian's pocket, yes, that, you would imagine, could turn opinion very quickly.
Exactly. And in fact, this week in Moscow, you know, obviously everybody was quite surprised by the events of last weekend, and that was the talking point on Monday. But by Tuesday, I can tell you the majority of people I speak to in Moscow were not in our business necessarily or whatever. They were very focused on the ruble and the risk that they might have some travel restrictions, that their lifestyle might be impacted, might be negative. And I think this is something the government and the government advisors are very aware of. If this issue gets out of hand and it starts to impact how Russians have become used to living and traveling, etc., then you could certainly have not just a domestic economic consequence, but very much a political blowback as well. And Russia's next election cycle is coming up at the end of 2016. That could be a big factor if this is handled badly.
Elisaveta, Chris mentioned Russians traveling there, and Russians are great travelers, and they end up in this country as well as everything else, as you yourself are proof positive of. That's something that people need to take into account as well. If people are restricted in their ability to travel, that has consequences.
Absolutely, yes. So that's what we see now. Measures have been taken by certain countries in terms of travel restrictions. And I remember a few weeks ago, I read in one of the articles that if the conflict continues, the measures will be, Russia will be isolated diplomatically, politically, and economically. And the first thought I had was restrictions on traveling. You know, because this is it's a major issue for any Russian business person, diplomat, or anyone who is doing business abroad, a travel restriction. So I think one of the lawyers who is doing business in Russia, and I'm in contact with him quite on a regular basis, you know, for business, he said to me a while ago, actually, he expressed concerns whether visas and things like that might be refused or might be given further consideration. And there were visas to EU countries, you know. So it's a major issue, a major concern. Yes.
I believe as well that people have actually been in touch with the Irish-Russia Business Association inquiring about asylum at this point.
Yes, we're going to see, and I had a few inquiries as well, absolutely. We will see in the next few months a number of asylum seekers from Ukraine, I think, and there will be both. There will be Russian nationals and Ukrainian nationals as well, because as we know, this conflict has two sides. Unless it's going to be resolved in a peaceful manner, I think we do see already. I already had a few people inquiring about asylum in Ireland, so that is the consequences of the current affairs.
Chris, from where you stand, from the view from Moscow, if you like, is the economic argument ultimately the one that's likely to hold sway here?
Short term, no. I think that, you know, certainly the sense in Moscow is that Russia is now already committed to Crimea, can't back out of it. And so I think we have to be prepared for the effect that Crimea referendum set for Sunday of next week will vote, as the government suggested, in favour of Russian joining the Russian Federation. And I think the Kremlin will immediately accept Crimea as part of the Russian Federation. So I think I cannot really see anything other than that outcome. And now, that will obviously be bad, but I don't think that in itself is the red line. I don't think that in itself would escalate the sanctions to this kind of very dangerous level that we've been referring to. I think the red line is if Russia crosses into East Ukraine. And this is what I think has been, been warned about. This would obviously escalate the crisis into this hot war that Sergei Markov mentioned in your introduction. So I think, you know, that's the most dangerous thing. And I think, you know, all sides, European, Russian government, Kiev government, I think are all very aware of that. Crimea, to a large extent, is now gone. I think that's just the practicality of it. But that's not the red line, in my opinion, in terms of economics.
Is Ukraine. Chris Wiefer and Elisaveta Donnery, thanks very much for coming into us this morning. Well,